So last week we were doing verse number 5, which is on page 23, and we did the first two lines, and it says, sit comfortably in a quiet place and a quiet time. The place should be clean. The head, neck and back should be in one straight line. And when you sit, you should be completely detached from the world. At that time, you are neither a father nor a mother, nor a man or a woman, or a doctor or engineer or accountant, housewife. You are nobody. You are just a seeker of truth. Control your sense organs, organs of action, and mentally bow down to your teacher and to the Lord before you sit for meditation. So these were the instructions that we went over last week. Today we shall do the last line on page 23, verse number 5. Hrit Pundarikam Virajam Vishuddham Vichintya Madhye Vishadam Vishokam. So, Hrit Pundarikam, Hrit means the heart, Pundarika means the lotus of the heart, and then in the middle it says Vichintya Madhye. So, think deeply, think correctly. Madhye means in the lotus of the heart. On what? On four points that indicate this truth. The truth that is shining in my heart, the Lord that is shining, the consciousness, the total Brahman is indicated by four pointers, and then there will be more given in subsequently in this text. So virajam means that which has no agitation. Rajas means which is disturbed, which is agitated. So virajam means that which has no disturbance, no agitation. Vishuddham means pure. Shuddha means pure. Vishuddha means visheshena pure. Very pure. Visheshena. Shuddha, very pure. Vichintya madhye, think in the lotus of your heart on that which is without disturbance, that which is pure. Vishadam. Vishadam means clear, bright. And vishokam, it is without sorrow. No grief. Shoka means grief. So without sorrow, without grief, griefless. So, here are the pointers we have indicated. First, he says, vichintya, think carefully. Chintya means to think. Vichintya means think carefully, think precisely. Our knowledge should be very clear. Who is this God that I am meditating on? Where does he reside? What does he do? Is he inside me or outside? Is he everywhere? Am I him or am I separate from him? And these ideas will be covered in more detail as we go through this text. But my knowledge should be without doubt. I should not have any doubts, any confusion. I don't know where God is. I don't even know if there is a God or not. I don't know what does he do. I mean, no. My knowledge should be clear. Just as in mathematics, you know, somebody asks, in fact, I had told this joke a while back, but I can repeat it. So there was this, they wanted to hire an accountant, you know, vice president of accounting in a firm. And so they interviewed a lot of candidates, you know. And each one was asked, how much is 2 plus 2? That was the only question. They said 4. Sorry, you can leave. So he went out. So they said, what did he ask you? He said, he asked me how much is 2 plus 2, and I told him 4, and they told me I could leave. He said, really? Another one, 2 plus 2, 4. Sorry, you can go. Another one said, you know, maybe they're asking for more. He said, 2 plus 2 is 5. You can leave too. Another one said, maybe they want less. He said, 2 plus 2 is 3. Sorry, you can leave too. And every candidate was rejected. And finally, one of the later candidates, last one, they asked him, how much is 2 plus 2? This was an accountant's, you know, firm. he says, sir, how much would you like it to be? And he got the job. That's what an accountant is, right? Whatever numbers you want, he creates. So, so the knowledge should be clear, should not be doubtful like that. You know, if it is 2 plus 2, it should be 4. But we are not sure. So this text will tell us what is the nature of Brahman. What is this God that I am meditating on? Where does he reside? And what is the technique to reach that? So it should be thought very clearly. Then they say it is in the lotus of the heart. First of all, what is heart and what is lotus? Heart, you know, people think of heart as this pumping organ, you know, that has four chambers, you know, atrium, ventricle, and it pumps the heart. That's not heart. Heart, as they have said in the book, and also it is said, it is the core of my personality. It is the essence where everything good resides, whether it's love and compassion and kindness. That is the heart, and that is where the God is reflected. You know, God, this consciousness that is everywhere. The reason you and I are alive, because in our mind and intellect, the consciousness is reflected. And the heart, even though I am everywhere, it is usually pointed as here. Like if I ask you, you know, who did this? Who wrote this on the board? You're not going to say, I wrote it or I wrote it. You'll say, I wrote it. Right? You always point here. You don't say, I wrote it or I wrote it elbow. No. I is always pointed here. So heart is generally indicated as here, which is the core of my personality, which is my true nature, which is what I really am, and represents everything that is good. That is called Hrit. Everything that is good and everything that is loving, compassionate, kind. So when I say the heart, it is good. That's why they say, oh, he's a very kind-hearted person. He's a good-hearted person. That means his heart is full of love. So that is called the heart. Now, why do they use the word lotus? Lotus is a very interesting, in our Vedanta, in our spirituality, lotus is given a lot of importance. Does anybody know why lotus is considered very important? Yeah, yeah, but there's more than that. Yeah, that is one point. It opens when the light shines. What else? The lotus has two or three. Yeah, go ahead. Anybody else?
It doesn't discriminate. It is, you know, anywhere. It's so dirty, the pond, whatever it could be, it's still there.
Yeah, so it grows even in the dirty. Yeah, that's very good. That's one point. What else? Or the lotus leaf has some specific quality that is
doesn't get wet,
water may fall. So the lotus is considered very special because it gives its beauty to everybody. It, you know, like a spiritual seeker, shares its beauty with everybody. You know, it opens when the light comes, and it doesn't discriminate between anybody. It's a fragrance, its beauty, everybody can enjoy. Secondly, it grows in dirty water. The water that the lotus grows in is very dirty, but when it comes out, it's so beautiful, it's so pretty. So similarly, a spiritual seeker, you say, oh, this world is full of so many problems, and there is so much dirt in this world, there is so much anger and conflict and killing and problems. Oh, this world is a terrible place to live in. Yes. But in the same world where you and I live and we say it's a terrible place, that same world Jesus lived in too. And he was like a lotus. You know, the world was full of problems even then. The Romans were persecuting him. Buddha lived in the same world. And Shankaracharya and Swami Chinmayananda and Guru Nanak and Mirabai. All these great saints, they had so many problems in their life. And their world was full of problems. But still they gave their fragrance to the whole world. So that's why lotus is like a saint, which even no matter how bad the circumstances are, the saint turns out to be beautiful and give its glory to all. So that is what, that means do not let the world affect you. Do not say, oh, there's so many problems. I am so stressed out. I have so many difficulties in my life. They all had difficulties. You look at the lives of saints, nobody had an easy life. Any saint, if you look at, the world always persecuted them, but they gave their beauty, their fragrance to everybody. So that is the second advantage of lotus. The third is the lotus leaf doesn't get wet. What it means is that if you put water on the lotus leaf, the water slides off, falls off. It doesn't stay. So similarly, in our case, no matter what kind of things people tell us, people criticize, people praise, people, you know, hurt us, harm us, I should remain unaffected. I should, my goal is clear, if I'm doing the right thing, and whether people praise or people criticize, people love me, people hate me, if my direction of my life is clear, if my goal is clear, then it doesn't matter what people say. People might say, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? No, I know what I'm doing. So it does not mean that you become like a rock or like a stone and you don't care. That's not the point. The point is that praise and blame will come. Let it slide off like water slides off the lotus leaf. Let it slide off. Doesn't touch me. Doesn't hurt me. That's when sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. So that's the point. We let people affect us so much. Somebody said something about me. Oh, I am depressed. Or somebody didn't smile at me properly. I am depressed. Somebody didn't talk to me. It's okay. If he doesn't want to talk to me, that's his problem. I'm fine. So that attitude one should have. And as long as I'm doing the right thing, it's not that you're doing the wrong thing and somebody tells you, you know what, this thing you're doing is not right. You're lying or cheating. No, then of course I should listen. But if my direction is good, if my goal is clear, then the world should not have any effect on me, should not be able to affect me. So that is called the lotus. Now, some of the qualities that they said you should meditate on. One is virajam. Virajam is rajam, rajas. Rajas is a quality of agitation. There are three qualities in our mind. We have talked about that before. Sattva, rajas and tamas. Tamas is the lowest, which means laziness, which means indolence. So a person who doesn't do anything, just sleeps and let society take care of him, doesn't work, uses drugs, you know. So those kind of people are tamasic, just drinks and sleeps. So that is tamas. The second quality is rajas. Rajas are most of us. We work, we go out and work in the world, but then our work gives us agitation because I'm competing. I have to beat the next guy. I have to be more successful. I have to make more money. I have to be number one. I don't care how many people I step on, how many people I hurt, how many people I cheat, as long as I am successful. So that kind of rajas creates agitation, creates disturbance, creates jealousy, greed, you know, competition, fighting. So, and then the third one is sattva, the highest, which is pure. This person works, but works for God, works for the highest, without idea of my and mine. It is, I'm working for the higher, and such a person doesn't get disturbed. See, a rajasic person who has a lot of rajas and trying to compete gets very disturbed. But a person who does not have rajas, who is very calm and peaceful, like a saint, he works in the world without letting the world affect him. So this center of my heart where the Lord resides has no agitation, is very pure, it is very sattvic, it is very calm, it is very peaceful. That's why when you sit for meditation and your mind is very quiet and you go within, then you wake up very peaceful, you know, on the days when your mind is very quiet. So that's why. Why? Because you have come in contact with the peace within, peaceful. Then it says, virajam vishuddham. Vishuddham means totally pure. Purer than pure. Shuddha means pure. Vishuddha means visheshena shuddha, totally pure. What do we mean by pure? What do you mean by something is pure? What does it mean? Innocent, yeah, what else?
Untainted.
Untainted, uncontaminated. Pure means that, innocent also means that which is uncontaminated with anything. Like we say, this is pure water. You know, they advertise Arrowhead is pure water, you know, with pure mineral spring water, which we don't know, you know, where they get it from, but they promote it as pure mineral spring water. So which means there is nothing else besides that. So anything that is, that way they say this is pure water, the air is so pure, you know, when you go up in the mountains, the air is so pure, while here the air is contaminated, there is so much pollution, so much. So pure means that which has no other contamination, nothing else. So this Lord, this consciousness, this Brahman, even though it supports the whole universe, is not contaminated by what is going on. You know, there may be fights and there may be, you know, problems and there may be, but the consciousness that supports it remains uncontaminated, is pure. It's not affected. The example they give is like a movie screen. Now on a movie screen, the movie is showing. Now first, you know, first week there is a movie of a fire, you know, all fire. Remember the famous movie Draft or something, Backdraft. And there was so much fire and they show these firemen going and rescuing people and some of them dying in the fire. But after the movie is over, does the screen become black? Is it become smoky or black? No, the screen remains white. It's pure white. Nothing happens. Then the next week, there is flood. Oh, there is big flood and rain and the whole area is, you know, flooded and people are dying and all. The screen, does it get wet? Even an iota of wetness? No. And the third week, there is a movie of blood and people are killing and knives and blood pouring. Screen remains white. It doesn't get red. The screen is necessary for the movie to project. If there was no screen, there would be no movie. But even though the screen supports the movie, itself is not affected, neither by fire, nor by flood, nor by blood, nor by killing, because it is the support. So similarly, this consciousness, this Brahman, the Lord, supports us all. But whether we are good or bad, the consciousness within us remains untainted, unaffected, unblemished. The Lord does not get affected by my good or bad deeds. Even though God is within me, He is functioning through me. But whatever good or bad deeds I do depends on my vasanas, does not affect the Lord within. So I have to suffer the consequences, but the Lord or the Atman or the consciousness is unaffected. So it is totally pure. Then the next word is Vishadam. Vishadam means clear, which also means bright. So bright means it is the source of all illumination, just as the sun illumines the whole universe, you know, all the whole earth, the plants, the birds, the animals, the fish, and it is the sun's energy that sustains everything. If the sun were not there, we would not survive. The earth would become frozen and we would not even be able to live a few days because everything would perish, the plants, humans, everything. But it is the illumination which illumines everything on this universe. But itself, it does not distinguish. The sun does not say, that person is very good, you know, I'll give him extra sunlight, and that person is bad, I'll give him less, you know, I'll punish. No. The sun says, my sunlight is available for all, and everybody is welcome, and it's up to you. Whatever energy I have given, whatever food I have given, the sun is responsible for all the food. So your use of the sun's energy will depend on your good or bad qualities. A good person will use the energy well, a bad person, but the sun totally illumines all equally. So the consciousness, the Lord, who is everywhere, gives equally energy to good and bad. It's not, he doesn't say that, oh, that person is bad and that person is good. No, I give my energy to all. It is up to you how you use the Lord's presence within. We are all alive. And, you know, Hitler was there too, and Mahatma Gandhi was there too. And, you know, they all lived at the same time. You know, Saddam Hussein was there and Mother Teresa was there. They all lived at the same time. The gurus and the criminals, they all reside. And in the world, there are both. And the Lord, the consciousness, does not distinguish. It gives its power equally to all. It is up to us how we use this human body to function in the world. How do I use the energy given by the Lord to live my life, good or bad? So that's why they say it is bright, it is luminous. Just as sun illumines the whole world and sustains it, so this consciousness, the Lord, Om, Atman, the Brahman, the substratum of this whole universe, illumines all of us and gives us energy, gives us light, gives us life. The second meaning of Vishadam is clear. Clear means it is obvious. It is there. You cannot say, where is God? You know, where is God? Have you seen God? I don't know where is God. People always say, have you seen God? And they go to the saints and say, have you seen God? And if he says, I haven't seen God, this guy is not worth anything. And let me go find somebody else who has seen God. So there's a very famous line in Hindi. I'll say it in Hindi and then translate. Lehri dhunde leher ko, kapda dhunde soot, jeev dhunde brahm ko, tino oot ke oot. So means the waves are looking for the ocean. One wave asks another, have you seen the ocean? Where is the ocean? I don't see the ocean. You know, he's a fool, right? The wave says, where is the ocean? You came from the ocean. Ocean is your substance. Then the cloth says, you know, have you seen cotton? I haven't seen cotton. Have you? The cloth asks another piece of cloth. Have you? Do you know who cotton is? Where is cotton? I have not. You are cotton. Cotton is from where you emerged. Similarly, when you and I, Jiva, when we ask, have you seen God? Where is God? Then we are equally foolish. As foolish as the wave asking for the ocean, as foolish as cloth asking for the cotton. And similarly, when I ask, where is God? I don't know God. I haven't seen God. Have you seen God? You are equally stupid as that wave asking for the... So that's why they say, tino oot ke oot. All three are equally stupid. That's the word he used. Oot means extremely stupid. Very stupid. So if you are asking, where is God? And you haven't seen God, then you are as stupid as the wave asking, where is the ocean? So that is what it says. You are, God is from whom you came. You are emerged from him. You are sustained by God. You will merge back into it. Just as a wave comes out from the ocean, is sustained by the ocean and merges back into the ocean. So waves cannot say, where is ocean? So similarly, I do not have to say, it's very clear. It is with me at all times. I'm speaking because God is in me. You are listening because God is with us. So God is constantly with us. And he's so obvious. He's there. You see the trees growing and the flowers blooming. And early morning, you hear the birds chirping. And that is God. You hear, see the beautiful sunrise in the morning or the beautiful sunset or a moon in the sky. You know, so pretty. That is God. You see a smile of a beautiful little child, which is so full of, you know, innocence. Innocent. That is God. You don't need to see God standing as a, you know, giant figure or something. See him in everything that is going on. The fact that I go to sleep and my body continues to work and my lungs keep moving, my heart keeps, I don't do anything. I don't make my heart beat. I just go to sleep. My heart keeps on beating. My digestive system works. My lungs work. My bones grow. My blood, everything. That is God. So it is so clear. So to say that I don't know God, I don't see God, is foolish. So that God, which is clear and bright, is within me. Yes? You have a question?
I was thinking, if you're hearing the news, it's so fresh in my mind because I come from Chile.
Yeah.
There was a terrible earthquake.
Yes.
Yesterday, 8.3.
Right.
And I was thinking, is God there too?
Yes. See, God is there too. Because, again, I'm not trying to blame or criticize or anything. That's not my intention. But first of all, we all have to die, right? Everybody has to die. So there has to be some reason to die. Somebody dies of a car accident. Somebody dies in a plane crash. Somebody dies in an earthquake. So it's just a reason for me to die. That's number one. Number two, what they believe, that we all have to undergo the results of our karmas, our actions. Good karmas give good result. Bad karmas give bad results. So just as an individual's karma affects him or her, similarly, the community has a karma too. There is a karmic law that affects, like for example, if a country, I don't know about Chile's situation, but suppose a country attacks another country, takes over their land, kills their people, it's not only the soldiers that will be affected, that country also will get a negative karma. So there is a karmic law which affects the communities, affects the countries, affects the societies. And it is said that when these accidents happen, there has to be some karmic reason. It doesn't happen just by accident. So, again, I'm not trying to say, I'm just telling you the explanation, what they give. When these accidents happen, when these natural calamities happen, there has to be some karmic reason why it is helping. So what happens is when some communities become too materialistic or too selfish, then sometimes tragedy comes to bring people together. See, when a tragedy strikes, then people become concerned about each other. Oh, there is so much death, so much suffering. It brings people together, makes them more caring for each other, caring for the neighbor. The whole world will, gather to help them. So sometimes these calamities bring people together. So there is always a reason why it is happens. That's the explanation they give. I mean, I don't mean to imply that they deserved it. It's not that.
Yeah. In the old times, when you grew up in the Catholic tradition, it was a punishment because the people haven't done
right. Right.
God. But here there is a physical reason, scientific reason. It's known that the earth across the Pacific.
Yes.
And that's why in California we have the same problem.
True.
There is the phases of the earth.
Yes.
They're in play, and this has been studied, and they know any time it's going to
right.
strike.
Yeah, which is true. So that also you can say that if you choose to live in an earthquake zone, knowing very well that California is prone to earthquakes, if you choose to live here. And so that is another explanation. Scientifically, that also is fine. That also is a clear explanation that it is known that this is an earthquake fault zone. And if you choose to live here, you suffer, you're ready for the consequences. But again, in an earthquake, you will find that certain communities will be totally devastated. And certain communities will, even though they may be on the same earthquake fault. So we don't know. The law is so complicated. It's very hard to judge.
Yeah.
But that could be another explanation scientifically. Yes.
I think the point is so easy to point towards God when
right.
you mention something beautiful, the sunshine, the flower,
right.
everything.
Right.
The biggest problem for us is to make sense of the bad stuff.
Oh, like, why do people get cancer?
Exactly.
But see, if people didn't get cancer, then people would live forever.
Yeah.
Then our grandfather and great-grandfather would still be living.
Yeah.
Because they have to die of cancer or heart disease or stroke or some reason. If the dinosaurs, there was a comet that came and hit the earth and the entire dinosaur race was wiped out. If that comet hadn't hit, the dinosaurs would still be living and you and I would have no place. So why does death come? Because the old has to die for the new to be born. The children keep on taking birth. But if the old people don't die, don't vacate the earth will become overpopulated. See, like trees, like in the forest, if there are trees, they keep growing. There will be, after all, the space will run out and there will be not enough land. Not enough fertilizer. So old trees have to die for new trees to grow. Old people have to leave for young people to go. And sometimes young people also go, but then that we had talked about before also, that, you know, whatever my destiny is for this life. But the point is that there is a constant birth and death, and there has to be some excuse. Now 200 people die in a plane crash. We feel very bad, but 200 people die every day in California in car accidents. Every day in California, or if you count the 200 people dying every day in car accident, do we think even once about it? No. It's okay, he died. But 200 people died in a plane crash, oh, everybody feels so bad. It's the same thing, whether you die in a plane crash or you die in a car crash. Death is death. So I don't see that it's anything good or bad. It is the natural law. Whoever is born must die. Yes.
We don't know what our dialogues are or what our movements are in this play, but if we meditate, then he'll guide us. That's right.
I think that's a very good, excellent point about, you know, when you have the disease. But about the puppets, there is some truth in that, but also to think that I am a puppet, that means I have no free will. See, that we have certain amount of destiny, like what. Again, destiny is not God who is deciding your destiny or your destiny. It is each one of us decides our destiny based on our past actions. Not only this life, but in previous lives. So I made my destiny. And because of that, my own destiny, I am suffering the consequences. So you take responsibility. Surrender is very good. But another aspect of surrender is that whatever is happening is a result of my good or bad actions. So I created my destiny because of my past actions. So in this life, I have an opportunity to improve my destiny by good actions or make my destiny worse by my bad actions. So what that does is it gives us, you and me, the power. That is one way of looking. If you surrender and say, God, you are working through me, then that I should not arise. That is one part.
You have free will to surrender.
Yes.
But if you want to not surrender,
right,
and have a separate will.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Surrender is very good because ultimately my ability to work comes from God. The fact that I'm speaking right now, the fact that I could read, I could study, because of the guru and because of God, I have whatever little knowledge we all have. I can see, hear, smell, taste, touch. So yeah, that is the point, that all my abilities come from God. And so what she means by surrender is that, yes, without God, I wouldn't be able to do anything. And that is very good. That is number one, you know, that the ability to say that, thank, be grateful to God for whatever I have done. But then the second aspect is that I still have the free will. As you said, to surrender, I have the free will to do what is good and desperate. Yeah, but it's kind of complicated, but that's a good point. Thank you. It's very nice. Good. Very good example. Yeah. The last one is Vishokam, that is no grief. So when you come in contact with the Lord, you find that He's all bliss, all joy. And the closer you come to the truth, the more joy you feel. That's why in meditation we feel, if you really go deep and your mind becomes still, you must have noticed that your mind feels very peaceful, feels very good, feels very happy. So the quieter the mind, the more peaceful I am, the happier I am. So that is what is meant by no grief. There is no sorrow, there is no tragedies. It is pure joy. And the Lord is, When I experience that inner joy, then it is not joy because of something. Like in our case, if I get ice cream or a pizza, that is joy. If I don't get ice cream, then I'm not happy. Or if the weather is good, nowadays the weather is good, I'm happy. If it's too hot, I'm unhappy. If it's too cold, I'm unhappy. So then my happiness is dependent on situations, you know, or on people. If this person loves me, I'm happy. This person doesn't love me. So our joy, our happiness depends on objects, you know, money, position, power, job. But the Lord, when person is in deep meditation, experiences joy within, then that joy is not dependent on any object, but it is anand, it is bliss. It is total bliss, total joy, and that is the experience. So that is what we should meditate on. The one that is without agitation, the Lord that is pure, that is obviously clear, and that is pure joy, and it is the subject. It is the knower. It is that which knows my body, mind, intellect. That is the Lord that I should meditate on. So these are beautiful pointers. So when you meditate, you think that I am of the nature of, I do not have any agitation, I am pure, I am bright, and I have no grief, I have no sorrow, I am joyful. That is because I am that consciousness, that is me, and that consciousness is one. And that is what we will be talking in the next entire book about, how me and that consciousness are one. So next week we'll talk about whether God is form or formless. Eyes closed. Back is erect but not stiff. Soft smile on the lips. Meditation is my appointment with God. It's my private time with God, who resides within me as life, as consciousness. It's a happy time. Relax the body from head to toe. Pay attention to each part. Move from the head to the toe, and then back from the toes to the head, and relax. Now pay full attention to the breath. Watch the air as it moves in and out. When thoughts come, do not follow them. Just ignore any thoughts that arise. Thought could be of work, family, health, what I'm going to do after this class. Ignore all thoughts. Turn your attention inward. To the core of your heart, the lotus of your heart. I am pure. I am without agitation. I am clear. I am bright. I am of the nature of bliss. Go deep within, ignoring all other thoughts. If the mind wanders, bring it back by observing the breath or by mentally chanting Om. Let us contemplate and abide in our true nature for the next few minutes. That is my true nature.
Om.